Hey, gorgeous lady. How you doing?
Hi, beautiful. I'm fucking amazing. You look absolutely stunning with your red lipstick.
Girl, Fenty, that lip stunner.
I gotta get on that.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. One, it's super highly pigmented. So you need a lot less than you think you do because if not, it gets fucking everywhere.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. And it's the lip stunner. So when you see it, it looks like a nail polish.
Oh, and then you paint it on?
Yeah. So the applicator takes a little bit of getting used to. So I usually, when I use this, I kind of overdraw my lips because I'm like, fuck that up. But I'm not super upset about it.
I mean, they look amazing.
Thank
I can barely
you.
Handle regular lipstick. So that seems like an advanced course I can't handle.
I believe in you. We can do it. You can figure it out.
You're so sweet. We have an interloper into the podcast today because Boo is all over my desk and I'm literally like holding him captive so he doesn't run directly over my keyboard, which
he loves to do apparently.
Yes. My story was filled with just like so many random letters and I was like, how the fuck did this end up here? And then I was like, the cat. That's how this ended up here.
I love it.
Also, the mouse for a computer is accurately named because Boo is constantly trying to catch it and chase it.
That's hilarious. I never would have thought that.
He's very funny. He has quite a sense of humor, I will admit.
Okay, super important piece of business.
Night Country.
My God.
I still haven't recovered.
Think about it. That I'm never going to hear the words think or think about it the same way ever again. Like,
no. I gasped out loud.
Oh, same.
I slapped my arm over to Johnny's chest and just like assaulted him. And I don't even know. I was speechless. It was so fucking good and so intense. And I'm so sad there's only one more episode left. Like, how can they wrap it up?
I know. Someone had suggested, propositioned, really, I think it's more hoped that it would be like a 2-season thing.
Don't.
I know.
Get my hopes up, Monique.
I know.
Don't tease me.
Because I'm like, how do they wrap this up in one more episode?
Yeah.
I need like 18 more right now.
Oh my God. Yes, please. Like immediately.
It's so good.
I know. Jinx. I mean, I would not be mad if they wanted to do a second season.
No, not at all.
I mean, depending on this, how this shakes out.
I know, because it's – don't fuck me on this last episode, my country. You guys have just – you've been crushing it every week, and I just
– I'm so scared. I'm so scared. I'm trying to have really low expectations because – I've been burned by True Detective before. So
I mean, you're not alone.
We all have. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I don't know what to expect.
No.
It's more where it is. I have no idea what to expect. I'm a little sad. It's going to be the last one.
Oh, yeah. We might have to have a little drink and cry about it together. We'll drown our sorrows, our Night Country sorrows.
Well, we are going to see each other the day after the finale, so... Maybe.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. I'm very much looking forward to our date.
Same. Yeah, because we have some fun things coming down the pike for you all. So in addition to doing all of this and our other jobs, we are working extra hard to have these fun stuff that's coming. So hopefully you guys are into it. You like it.
Surprises galore.
Surprises galore, baby. Yes.
I'm excited.
Me too.
We're being such teases right now. I love it.
I know. We got to keep them titillated.
Yes. Speaking of titillating, I just caught a glance of what you're wearing. It's very like negligee-esque and I am here for it.
Because that's exactly
bitch. What
it is. It's pajamas.
Of course it is. But like the most gorgeous, classy pajamas you've ever seen instead
Thank
of
you.
What I wear, which is like an old shirt that I made into a crop top.
Well, so here's the thing, because unlike my boyfriend and his pajamas, the pajama saga.
We're never letting this go.
No. I actually don't wear pajamas. I run really hot when I sleep. Unless it's very cold, then I'll wear like leggings and a sweatshirt. But so like a pajama slip is just kind of like a lounge around the house, or, oh, I have to like see people, but, you know, don't want to put too much effort into it vibe.
You're a vibe. I love all of it. I'm here for it.
I fucking love you. I can't. Oh my God.
So what else did you get up to this week?
I saw a show. I saw Speakeasy Magic again, which is so fucking great, with a friend of the pod, Todd Robbins. We went for a friend's birthday, and when I had gone several months ago, I'd suggested it to these two friends. So this couple, and then so one of them, as a gift, like a surprise birthday for the other, planned a dinner with a bunch of friends and to go to Speakeasy Magic. And I was included in that, which was very lovely. So like I hit up Todd and I hit up, you know, a couple of the magicians that I knew in the show, and the show was fabulous as usual. For those of you who may not remember when I saw the show in December, the premise of it is there's a stage, and then there'll be like one magician who does like a 10-minute set or whatever. And then that'll be over. And then there'll be like 15 magicians who just kind of spread out across the room. And then you have one sitting at every table doing close-up crazy magic shit. And then like they kind of like musical chairs it like throughout the night. Like there'll be like a stage performance, and then they switch out what magicians are at what tables. And that goes on for about like 90 minutes, 2 hours. And it's wonderful. It's amazing. It's so fun. And Todd Robbins, who we adore, is one of the co-hosts. It's his show, but he co-hosts it with this sexy Hollywood blonde. But this time there was another character who was not a magician, who was kind of like this like vagrant Russian sex worker type vibe woman.
Okay.
Who, like, sang two songs kind of like randomly, and then had like little like chit chat back and forth with Todd. And I was like, okay, you know, okay, maybe that's like a thing, whatever. So the next day he messages me back being like, I'm so sorry that I missed you. I was dealing with all these producers because they are really about this new character who's Gina fucking Gershon.
No.
Randomly.
What?
And I was like, what the fuck? So then I messaged the rest of the guys that I went with being like, BT Dubs, that singer was like, the Russian singer was fucking Gina Gershon. And then one of them messages back being like, I fucking knew it. He's like, I told my husband that she looked exactly like Crystal Connors from Showgirls. And I was like, girl, you fucking nailed it.
That's amazing.
It was pretty great.
What a wonderful surprise. What the fuck?
I know. And it wasn't
like, likes her magic. I support this.
I guess. And there was no like, BT Dubs, this is Gina Gershon, like anywhere. Like it was just her being like, I'm just going to do this character and sing a couple songs.
I love that even more.
Oh, 10,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incognito Gina Gershon.
Great band name. I love it.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Definitely play the indie scene for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I also went to a show.
Oh.
I went to a burlesque show at the Slipper Room, which was wild.
Yeah. Who'd you see?
It was like a variety show. So it was a bunch of people. I imbibed quite a few alcoholic beverages. So I don't really remember anyone's name, unfortunately. Apologies. I watched a man swallow a 3-foot balloon like you would have for balloon animals.
That's Albert Cadabra.
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh my God, you know everyone. I love it.
I know every, in like a certain world. Yes, he does that, and that's fucking nuts.
That was his name. As soon as you said that, I was like, yep, that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he swallowed a 3-foot balloon.
Yep.
Did an entire skit strip.
Yep, burlesque-y, boylesque. Take his clothes off.
I had forgotten about the balloon.
Yeah, that's the point.
Which the performance involved talking, for the record. Like, he talked with this balloon inside of him, and then he just pulled it out at the end.
Yep.
And I lost my mind.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. It's like impressive, but you're like, I don't know that I needed to see that.
Oh, I definitely didn't need to, but I'm very happy I did.
Yeah,
very happy I did. Very impressed. It was wonderful. They do a great job. I love Burlesque and Burlesque.
Of course. Slipper is so great. Yeah, because we went when Queen Grace was in town, we took her to Slipper.
Yes. I forgot that's where we went.
I love Slipper.
I've been to a couple shows there and they've all started to blur together in my old age or my drunkenness, either way.
I mean, it is a little like fever dream-esque when you go.
Yes.
But it's pretty fab.
That's a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you went to Slipper.
I know. Me too. I very rarely get out, and especially in the winter when it's this goddamn cold out, but I was like, need to be done.
Ugh. It's so fucking cold.
It's brutal.
And I understand that's the gig. And I understand that it's actually not that cold compared to what it should be, but we've destroyed the planet.
Also, I feel like anyone who's lives in like Chicago or Wisconsin is like, you think that's cold?
Are you fucking serious right now?
You're 32 degrees. Like, can you relax, please? It's negative 20 here.
You know what I think it is? I think it's because the weather hasn't been consistent. So there's no way to really acclimate to it because literally it was 60 degrees on Saturday. And then it was like 18 on Wednesday.
Yeah. Roller coaster.
Yeah, for sure. Physically, emotionally.
And otherwise,
I fucking love you so fucking hard.
We're two on the same page today.
I love it.
I can't handle it.
I will say, when you washed your face this morning, did you put toothpaste on your face instead of cleanser? Because I don't know if we're on that page, because that's where I am today.
No.
Yeah. And I was like, oh. I was like, that feels cool. And I was like, that's wrong. It's the wrong thing.
Okay. I haven't done that. But I have accidentally, because I bought these, they call them like tube keys, where they like roll the tube of toothpaste up.
Oh, yeah.
So I have my face wash and my toothpaste in those. And you can't really like see the label when you do that. So I did once put face wash on my toothbrush to brush my teeth. Fortunately, realized before I put it in my mouth, because that would not have been good. But I've never done toothpaste on my face.
Thank you for making me feel seen. I appreciate that.
Oh, no, that was too real, too relatable for me.
Because I was like, oh, okay, I see. I was like, yeah. I was like, tell me you're overworked and underslept.
without telling me.
I was like, that's it. That was the moment.
It's too real.
Yeah, I also got to see some burlesques today. I got to see friend of the pod, Dandy Dillinger, perform at the Back Room for a Valentine's Day soiree situation. And she was fab as usual. I love that whole vibe. It's all great.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. And I'm so fortunate that like I have all these friends who are burlesque performers now.
You know them all, apparently. I just said one thing from one act, and you were like, yeah, I know exactly who that is.
I mean, because it's like, I don't know a ton of people who do that.
Yeah.
And especially not in New York. It's very specific.
At least not on stage. Maybe in a dark alley.
Ayo.
Sorry, we're already getting fresh. It's so, we're both delusional. No, I love it. I feel like that's what this is.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
All right. On that fresh note.
Yeah.
Do you have any more news for me or do you have a creepy paranormal story for me?
I have a creepy one.
I'm so excited.
I'm into this one. It's interesting. So I'm going to do like a trigger warning real quick. At the top, there is a quick mention of suicidal ideation, but that's it. It's just like there it is. And we move on from it. But in case that's a thing for people, which is understandable. Just letting you know. So sources, vice.com, Reddit, tripadvisor.com, fodors.com, howstuffworks.com, volcanogallery.com, konasnorkelandsail.com, psmag.com, hawaiiguide.com, and thehawaiianplan.com.
Yay!
Because three guesses as to where the fuck we're going, babies.
I heard Kona and I knew.
Yes. You know, I only know the beer because we sell it at the theater I work at.
I had a dog named Kona growing up.
Of course you did.
That's why I know. Yep.
It's natural to want to bring something home with you from vacation, whether it be a keychain from a tour shop at the airport or a piece of original artwork from a local artisan. But there are some things that, according to some, you should never take home with you. Hawaii is many people's ultimate travel destination, and for obvious reasons. The Hawaiian Islands boast unmatched beauty in every corner. In addition to the temperate climate and scenic beaches, the island paradise offers access to natural wonders like volcanoes. As a result of these volcanoes, you can find lava rocks throughout the Hawaiian Islands. Lava rocks are formed from solidified lava and have a unique appearance with a black, smooth surface and a jagged edge. So it's not surprising that many tourists, tempted to take a piece of the islands home with them, see lava rocks as the perfect souvenir. But you should think twice before taking anything from the island, as it is said that anyone who takes a lava rock off the island of Hawaii will incur the wrath of Pele's curse. In Hawaiian mythology, Pele is the goddess of fire and volcano and the creator of the Hawaiian Islands. Legend has it that she resided in the crater of Kilauea on Hawaii Island, which is modern-day Hawaii Volcano National Park, and it is believed that her wrath caused volcanic eruptions and lava flows which created Hawaii. Pele's visible power has garnered the respect and worship of the Hawaiian people, who, to this day, leave offerings such as gifts and fruits, not only as a sign of respect for the island's matriarch, but as an effort to win her favor in the hopes that she will bestow the gift giver with good luck. Being that Pele is the mother of Hawaii, it is said that she's protective of her lands and her children, which she considers to be the lava rocks and sands of Hawaii. Legend has it that the fire and volcano goddess will enact a curse to anyone who steals her children off the island, which can only be lifted once you return the stolen items to their home of Hawaii. Now, if you do the smallest amount of digging, you will be hit with obligatory devil's advocates right away. In the book Power Stones, Letters to a Goddess by Linda Ching and Robin Stevens, the authors claim that the curse isn't actually from Hawaiian mythology, but that it dates back to as recently as 1946 to a park ranger who was over shitty tourists taking the rocks as souvenirs. So he invented the story of the curse as a way of discouraging the practice.
I love it.
I mean, same.
That's brilliant.
Yes. It has also been said that the curse was invented by bus drivers. Traveling by bus is one of the most common means of transportation for tourists. It is believed that bus drivers got tired of cleaning up after the tourists who carried rocks and stones back into the bus after visiting the islands. Therefore, to prevent them from tracking sand and dirt onto their bus, and therefore making their work easier, they invented the curse. While Hawaiian Postal Service worker Alton Uyetake said he didn't learn about this particular superstition growing up, he told Pacific Standard Magazine, quote, "It's really something. The idea that what's natural to Hawaii should stay in Hawaii," end quote. Regardless of where the story of Pele's curse originated from, people do believe it. And there are those who claim to have had nothing but bad luck since taking the stones off the island. So they mail them back in the hopes that Pele will reverse her curse. The first recorded instance of this was a news story in 1974 about lava rocks being returned on a daily basis to the Volcano House Hotel. In 1976, a package with 9 pieces of lava rock were mailed from California and addressed to, quote, "the mayor, Kona, Hawaii, USA," end quote. There was also a report in 1978 about a family in Buffalo, New York, that had bad luck until they returned all the rocks they had taken from the islands. You know that book I mentioned earlier, Power Stones, Letters to a Goddess? Well, that book includes several copies of letters, both long and short, typed and handwritten, often addressed to Pele herself, from people detailing their stories of misfortunes that befell them after taking the lava rocks, and their hopes that with returning them, their luck will improve. Some letters, like this one I'm going to read, are just a brief apology. Quote, "Madam Pele, I'm returning that which is rightfully yours and was never mine to keep. Please accept my most humble apologies. I hope someday I may be returned to your favor. With sincere regret, Kathy," end quote. Many of the letter's writers state how they aren't suspicious, with one letter in the book beginning with, quote, "I can't believe I'm writing this," end quote, before going into detail regarding their recent troubles, of which there are many. various letters, recounts stories of car accidents, lost luggage, missed flights, financial troubles, unemployment, illness, prison time, divorce, and even death of a loved one, all of which have been attributed to Pele's curse. One writer included this postscript, quote, "Although I don't believe in the Polynesian gods or their legions, I'm not in a position to argue," end quote.
Damn.
I mean,
don't fuck with Pele.
Pero like,
she doesn't fuck around, apparently.
I just don't know why you would even go there.
Yeah. Don't tempt fate.
10,000%.
Yeah. Take only pictures, leave only footprints. I know I was not the only one who learned this.
I completely forgot about that. I fucking love you. But yeah. With another pleading, quote, "I'm now asking Pele for forgiveness. I will never doubt a superstition again. And the next time I'm advised against doing something, believe me, I will not do it," end quote. Again, don't fuck with shit.
Yeah.
It is said that Pele's curse can last for days, months, and even years after taking the lava rocks. And it is believed that the only way to rid yourself of the curse is to return the quote-unquote stolen item to the island. As a result, in the last few decades, thousands of pounds of rocks are returned to Hawaii every year.
Yo, what?
Girl, these are not fucking one-offs.
First of all, why are people still stealing these rocks, and especially in this amount? Because people are trash. Why'd I even ask?
Well, it's like, you know, I think I saw something that I was like 8 million people went to Hawaii like 2015 or something.
Okay.
So like everyone takes, not everyone, like let's say half of them take a few rocks. There you go.
That's up quick. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
That's insane though.
Yes. With the lava rocks being sent to local post offices, town halls, and even directly to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. There's even a return service that advertises online, inviting small donations and offering a P.O. box in the town of Volcano to which returns can be mailed. The letters that accompany the return stones are then posted on the same site along with photographs of the objects that they're sending back. Hawaii Volcanoes National Park also shares some of the letters they receive too. But the extremely high volume of returns often frustrate those who handle them, from postmasters to park rangers alike. A cultural interpreter for the National Park Service wrote, quote, "There is, in all caps, no curse of the rocks," end quote, in a document that was circulated internally. In the online forum, photos.com, someone inquired about Pele's curse as they had recently taken some of the lava rocks home with them after vacationing in Hawaii and if they should return the rocks. Most responders advised that yes, the posters should return the stones as keeping them are notoriously bad luck. However, user Fern420 wrote, quote, "Please take it from someone who has to open and help go through over 50 pounds worth of rocks a week at the park. Please do not send it back. There is no curse of Pele. The rock can never be returned to where it was taken. It will only go into an ahu behind the visitor center, not back into nature. Want to do one better karma-wise than returning it? Use them to teach people at home about the different types of lava rocks, volcanoes, Pele, and Hawaii in general. The curse was made up to prevent people from doing exactly what you did, disturb the natural environment. The island ships sand and rock products around all of the time, but we don't want people in public areas just grabbing stuff and putting it in their bags. There are many plants and animals that use rocks for shelter, so we want them to stay where they are," end quote. A public affairs specialist at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, Jessica Farron-Kane, said that the park receives returns every day by mail, but every so often that there is a quote-unquote surge, which Farron-Kane blames on, quote, "tabloid-style stories," end quote, about it. Regarding the alleged curse, Farron-Kane says, quote, "It's almost impossible to dispel, even though there is no foundation in the myth or history of Hawaii's indigenous cultures to indicate Pele cursed rocks," end quote. While that may be the case, I'm going to read you a few of the letters that accompanied rocks being returned, written by people detailing their experiences after taking the lava rocks. And you can decide if there's any weight to Pele's curse. A one to travel for fun wrote, quote, "When I was in college and my buddy and I did our 3-day weekend to Honolulu, Waikiki, I took back a beautiful piece of lava rock. The next week, I was in an accident that destroyed my car and put me in the hospital for a couple of weeks. I guess I had crushed some vertebrae. Thank goodness no one else in the car was injured. No one in the car that hit me was injured either. I'm not superstitious, yet I still connect the lava and the accident all these years later." End quote.
That's kind of weird that no one else was injured.
Yeah.
Lucky, obviously. But
uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. Okay. It's fucked up, but you know, car accidents happen all the time, with or without a curse, unfortunately.
Correct.
It's bad drivers, people being bullshit. But there are people who have had quite a bit more awfulness happen to them. HJY wrote, quote, "I visited Hawaii July 2003. I picked up 3 lava rocks when I visited the North Shore and brought them home with me. I did not take them out of disrespect, but I would like to return them with all respect to the goddess Pele. I did not know that lava rock was not to be taken from the islands. A friend at home told me the story about lava rock, and I found more information on my computer. I am very sorry to have taken the lava rocks. Please return them to the rightful place and email me when this is done. I have had nothing but, all caps, bad luck since I returned home from my trip. My business was nearly sabotaged. I've had large medical bills, never been unhealthy, bank accounts stayed depleted, a window and brakes had to be replaced on my new car, a rental house became vacant, taxes and repairs at the end of the year, plumbing in my home had to be repaired, the heating unit in my vacation home had to be repaired. Besides this, business has been slower than ever before. Please make sure the lava rocks are returned so that my luck might change for the good. Thank you very much. Respectfully, HJY, Sylvester, Georgia." End quote. I mean, it also sounds like that vacation home's a fucking dud.
Right?
That like everything's break. But also like, I don't know. Things break. CNS from Brookline, New Hampshire wrote, quote, "We visited Hawaii in 1995. Since then, we have had 8.5 years of bad luck."
8.5?
Girl.
Fuck off.
Girl. "Including my parents going through 2 foreclosures on their home. My father being in an accident where he lost his leg and my husband having cancer, which was the last straw. Please ask Pele for our forgiveness and bless us with good luck." End quote. So it's starting to get pretty bad. And this next one is also going to escalate in the badness of the stories.
Oh, shit.
Quote, "I first would like to apologize for taking the lava rocks in the first place. It felt wrong from the beginning, but my husband really wanted to show the rocks to my nephew. We meant no harm and had honorable intentions of teaching my nephew and giving him a souvenir of our trip to the volcano. I believe that we have offended Pele and would appreciate you returning the rocks for us. We cannot afford to come and do it ourselves, or we would. We were in Hawaii about 5 years ago, and our lives have become unbearable ever since our return, starting with losing our luggage, with all gifts we purchased, except for the rocks, to marriage problems, to death. Our friends and family members have made comments about how we have a black cloud over us and how they have never seen 2 people with such bad luck. I could go on and on about all the traumatic happenings that have occurred in our lives since our return. It has been one serious turmoil after another, but our turmoil has been so I cannot talk of most of it. I would like to turn this around and apologize to Pele for offending her. I would have returned them sooner, but I kept trying to fight the superstition. But now that my husband has tried to commit suicide, I cannot find our lives bearable anymore. I have no choice but to admit to our mistake and beg the forgiveness of Pele. My heart goes out to her and her people, but also to my husband who is in so much pain. I throw myself at your mercy, Pele, and beg you to forgive me and my husband's foolishness. I have offended thee, and for that I cannot take back. But please accept my gift of humiliation by standing before you and my God and admitting my sin. My husband and I have suffered so, and would like to offer your rocks back in hopes that you will have a merciful heart and let us out of the clutches of the evil that surrounds our life. I thank you for returning these rocks for me, and I hope that you can forgive us for disrespecting your sacred place. I appreciate your service and thank you for your open heart. This feels like a great big hug. Sincerely, C.M., Woodbridge, Virginia, end quote. Then there is this two-part letter that's one of the craziest things I've ever read that's been attributed to a curse. Part one reads, quote, "Dear Madam Pele, years ago I took some lava rocks. After hearing about the curse and all the bad luck my family has had, my daughter-in-law returned them since I was not at home. Ask Pele to take the curse off my family and forgive me. Sincerely, MHF, Laguna Beach, California." So, okay, not specific, not a big deal, right? Well, there was a follow-up letter that goes like this. Quote, "I am M's daughter, JR. Mother took the rocks, we think, in 1983. Her first grandchild and my only daughter was murdered by a serial killer on a college campus in 86.
What?
Girl. Her second grandchild married a mean, jealous moron who causes constant problems. Her fourth grandchild was crippled in an accident. My husband lost all of his 401k savings in the market. My mother also lost 75% of her money. Things constantly happen to my home, which we learned is on an Indian burial ground. As you can see, I could go on and on. I just listed the most serious. Please pray for my mother and her family that we will be released from all this bad luck. The rocks were returned by her daughter-in-law to the post office on the Big Island. When I called, we did not know about you, and I was just told to send them to the post office. Maybe prayer to Pele will do the trick, and the thought of my precious grandchildren going through more bad luck is more than we can endure. Thank you, Jay. P.S., if you can suggest anything we can do, let us know, even if it is a return to Hawaii and a prayer session." End quote. These were just five of the literal hundreds of letters I came across. So maybe it's all coincidence, but the tale of Pele's curse is unlikely to go away anytime soon. Hawaii Volcanoes National Park Public Affairs Specialist Jessica Farrakane said that while the superstition didn't originate from a malicious place, she hoped that tourists would take the opportunity to learn about and have respect for Hawaiian culture, saying, quote, "Here, people are told that taking pohaku, or stones, is a sign of disrespect. You wouldn't take something that doesn't belong to you from somebody's house," end quote. It's bad manners. If, for whatever reason, you really, 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 really want a particular rock or some other natural object from Hawaii, there is a way to go about it properly and respectfully. When you want to take something from the land, pick up the object, hold it, and ask the land for permission to take it. If the land tells you that it is okay to take it, then it's yours. However, the land may also tell you that no, it's not okay, in which case you do not have permission to take the item. But if you're like, what the fuck? How will I know if the land said yes or no? Allegedly, quote, "you will feel the message from the land when you ask," end quote. Interesting caveat. Apparently, if you find something on the beach, you don't need to ask the land for permission to take it, as it technically isn't part of the land and it could be washed out to sea at any moment. So I don't know if you believe that the curse is real or if it's just a series of unfortunate coincidences. While I, for one, do not believe in coincidences, you better believe that the last person I would want to get on the bad side of was the goddess of fire and volcano. if you happen to take a lava rock from Hawaii and your life has gone to shit, you can mail your lava rocks to Volcano Lava Rock Return, Attention Rainbow Moon, P.O. Box 699, Volcano, Hawaii, 96785. And they will return the rocks to their rightful place. And that is the story of Pele's curse.
Damn. Don't fuck with Pele.
Don't fuck with Pele. Also, someone yesterday was telling me that this is like a major plot point in the movie Moana, which I have not seen.
Yes. It's been a minute since I have, so I had forgotten that. But
that it's about like stealing rocks and upsetting the fire goddess and having to return them. And I was like, okay, that's literally, because I was talking about the story to someone and they're like, that's a Moana. They're like, it's about that. I was like, that's literally what this is.
I didn't realize it was to this level though. Shit.
No. I thought it'd be like a few stories.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, my daughter was killed by a fucking serial killer and we think it has to do with this.
That one was wild.
What the fuck?
That was the plot of like 14 movies in one person's life.
10,000%.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with Pele.
Yeah. Love a vengeful goddess, but just
same, girl.
Not when that vengeance is directed at me. Thank you. Please and thank you.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. Just don't fuck it up. And the immortal words of RuPaul, don't fuck it up.
Words to live by.
You know?
I loved that story. That was really interesting.
Thank you. I did too. I was like definitely bummed out like when it was like, this isn't a thing. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, yeah, but, you know, and I understand like confirmation bias is a thing, but that's a lot of confirmation bias. That's
a lot of shit. Yeah.
And these are just like the ones you find like online, because then there's like the letters that they get like to the post office and to like the governor's office and like the volcano park.
Wild. All right. Well, I have no intention of stealing any lava rocks, but now I definitely won't.
I guess, or if you do, you just have to ask, is this okay? And then the land will give you a sign.
I'm not even taking that chance. No.
So when I went to Hawaii as a kid with my parents, we went to the black sand beaches, which is incredible. And I do have sand from there, because it's like, well, if you steal the sand, that's also fucked up. And I was like, oh no. But then when I read the thing of like, well, if it's on a beach, you're fine, because it doesn't belong to the land. I'm like, fuck yeah.
Okay.
And I think I've had cool shit happen to me since then. So I don't think I've been cursed.
Totally. Although I love how they're like, it doesn't belong to the land when it is in fact actually land.
Right.
This is some Waterworld shit.
I love you.
Where's Kevin Costner?
I love you.
I love you. I loved that story. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
It was creepy, but there, you know, were no ghost children, so I'm fine. No creepy cabin in the woods or something.
No, not this week from me anyway. I don't know about from you. Nope, obviously not, because I did the paranormal story. Guys, I put toothpaste on my face today. This is where I'm at. You just need to give me a second. I thought you
meant like trauma-wise. There you go.
There you go.
That's really funny. Yeah. To be fair, I'm not going to lie. Halfway through my story, I had a moment of panic because we did two listener tales last week. And I was like, oh my God, was I supposed to do a paranormal story? Did I forget my order? And I fully freaked out. And then I had to go back and look. And then I was like, okay, no. Thank God.
This is me every week. I do this every week. I freak out. Being like, which one? No, is this supposed to be? Am I the right one?
Yeah. I was like, oh, the Kushika. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, are you ready to get into it?
Let's fucking get into it, girl. I'm so fucking ready.
Good. Okay. I kept the trauma light this week.
Beautiful.
Because you have been going a little hard. So yeah. I wasn't going to one-up you. I was like, I feel like everyone needs
a break.
A nice little break.
I love you.
So I wasn't going to do any trigger warnings, but then your trigger warning did remind me that I do very briefly mention suicide. But otherwise, very lighthearted. Rated G.
Oh, amazing.
I guess PG.
It's the Disney of true crime stories. Fantastic.
It kind of is.
I love it. Okay, great.
Okay. So sources, USA Today, Medium.com, TheSportsman.com, Reddit, The Seattle Times, IndependentPublisher.com, HistoryLink.org, GQ, and Wikipedia. Anthony Curcio was born September 1st, 1980, in Monroe, Washington. His family was well-known in the town. His dad had been a star wide receiver at the University of Idaho, and his grandmother, mom, and older sister had all been homecoming queens. Growing up, Anthony idolized his father and wanted to be a receiver just like him. So he spent his days practicing football in the large yard of his family's lakeside home. Although he was small for his age, he made up for it with obsessive preparation and would stay up late game planning. And eventually, all his hard work paid off. In high school, he became an all-star wide receiver and point guard and was voted captain of both the football and basketball teams at Monroe High School. He received several honors and awards for his play in both sports and broke many records in football. He was talented, popular, and friendly, and was always the life of the party. Just one of those guys that everyone seemed to like. In his junior year, Anthony started dating the captain of the cheerleading team, Emily, who went on to become his high school sweetheart. In 1999, he received an athletic scholarship to the University of Idaho, his father's alma mater, and he was one step closer to achieving his childhood dream. And with Emily attending nearby Washington State University, he felt like everything was perfect. Although he was determined to make a name for himself in the world of football, the transition to college wasn't as easy as he expected. He enjoyed the party scene a little too much and ended up receiving a brief suspension from the team because of it. Although he got back on track and buckled down, he tore his ACL during practice one day in his sophomore year. The devastating injury required surgery, and afterwards, he was prescribed Vicodin for the pain. He was sidelined for weeks, but the injury took more than just a physical toll on him. His identity revolved around football, and with him no longer able to play, his self-esteem went down the drain. For a wide receiver, speed is everything, and according to Anthony, the injury took away the wheels. Then, the addiction to the painkillers he was prescribed crept up on him. The pills made him feel too good. He stopped showing up for practice altogether and just sat in his apartment playing video games. He never considered that his scholarship would be taken away, but it was. Afterwards, he transferred to Washington State University to be closer to Emily. There, he ran into a new problem. His Vicodin prescription had run out, and he began withdrawing violently. Vomiting, cramps, insomnia, diarrhea, the works. He'd never felt anything like it, and after a week of sleepless nights, he couldn't take it anymore. So he decided to intentionally injure himself to get more pills, kicking and slamming the top of his foot into the coffee table in his apartment until the veins began to split.
Jesus.
Yeah. Addiction is no fucking joke, dude.
For sure.
I mean, I can't handle stubbing my toe on the coffee table. I definitely couldn't pull this off.
Girl.
Yeah.
Yes. Ugh.
When the school doctor refused to give him anything stronger than ibuprofen, though, he started forging fake scripts and buying the pills illegally instead.
Yikes.
Yep. Almost overnight, he went from taking the recommended maximum of 5 pills a day to popping more than 30.
5 pills a day is still so much.
So much. But yeah, apparently it's like one every 4 hours, yeah. Not to exceed 5 were the instructions.
Ay, ay, ay.
At his worst, a year and a half later, he was taking the equivalent of 80 a day.
Jesus Christ.
Which I honestly can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. One, that's expensive.
Well, yes, my God. I take a lot of vitamins, and it's like maybe like 15, and it's like I'm like annoyed. I'm over it. I'm like, I don't like, there's some days that I skip it because I'm like, I don't care. I don't need my skin vitamins, whatever. Fuck it. I do. That's why I take them. But I'm like, ugh. So do that 80 times. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm obviously not addicted to my vitamins. That's, you know, obviously what the difference is, but
That's true. Also, I feel like once you get to a certain level of high when you're on opiates, you can't remember if you've taken them.
That makes sense.
So you're probably likely to take more, being like, wait, I was going to take one. Did I just take one?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember. I'm going to take another. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
With his addiction, Anthony was never able to get it together, and he blew his second shot at an athletic career. He had recovered from the knee injury and was playing basketball one day when the football coach approached him and invited him to join the team. It was an opportunity to play for an even bigger program. He was supposed to show up for practice the following Monday, but he'd run out of pills the day before and was going through withdrawals, so he blew it off. He never showed up, never talked to the coach again, and just like that, his promising football career was over.
Damn. That's so sad.
Very sad. But through it all, Emily was there for him. She was there when he told her about the drugs freshman year and when he got back from rehab that summer. After they graduated in 2004, he proposed and the two got married shortly after.
I'm sorry, she's getting married to some... She's aware of this fucking addiction or no?
Yes.
And this is who you want to get married to?
Is it their high school sweethearts?
I know.
It's one of those things, like, people have hard times. He went to rehab. He was supposed to be getting better. I know.
Just red flag central.
Oh, yeah. They bought a house in their hometown of Monroe and had their first daughter together. Anthony started his first business, Tony's Gaming, which bought and sold casino tables and other gaming merchandise. But within a few months of being open to the public, Tony's Gaming was unexpectedly shut down. Claiming that he did not possess the proper permits, the Washington State Gambling Commission and local police raided Tony's Gaming and confiscated all of his inventory. When he later found out that the police raid was due to influence from a real estate broker who had financial interest in a local casino, he attempted to retain legal representation, but was denied. In response, Anthony and several of his associates retaliated against the casino owner by breaking into his business and removing computers, files, and documents from the offices he owned.
That's illegal.
It is illegal, but it doesn't seem like he was ever caught or prosecuted for this burglary. I literally just found mention of this. It didn't say anything ever came of it. After this setback and under increasing financial pressure, Anthony relapsed despite having completed 4 drug and alcohol treatment programs and began forging prescriptions on his computer. He eventually got his realtor's license and began successfully flipping houses. But although he maintained his appearance as a successful business owner and family man, he was living 2 different lives. As his addiction progressed, so did his involvement in illegal activities.
That's just how it goes.
Yep.
Ugh.
And by his mid-20s, he had organized several high-dollar thefts, scams, and loan-sharking schemes.
Holy shit!
Yes. Which, again, is just, like, casually mentioned in the articles. They don't really get into it. According to Emily, Anthony had always loved crime movies, like Scarface.
I mean, same girl. Look at what the fuck we're doing. But, like...
Yes. But just don't do it. It's a movie. Yeah.
But also, like, the reality, especially, like, since we, like, deep dive into it every fucking week, like, we talk about this all the time. We know we could never get away with it, even though we know all the things to do to get away with it, because there's just too many things. It's not possible.
Yes. He was fascinated by the mafia because his dad's family was from the East Coast and he is Italian.
God.
Yep.
Is he like one of those that like his high school yearbook quote was like, ever since I was a kid, I want to be a gangster, like from Goodfellas? Oh my God.
I don't know.
It sounds like it.
Maybe. Apparently he had like a man cave in their house that he decorated with all his like favorite movie posters.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yes.
Get the fuck out. Also, like I can't. I cannot with any of this. Ugh, I can't. This is so cringy and eye-rolly.
His wife Emily's response was so funny about it too. She was like, yeah, I did not want any of that in the house. That's why it like got its own room. I mean, was like, relatable. I got it.
Yeah. Fucking having Scarface posters and shit up in your like fucking dining room. No, thank you. We're married. We're grown up.
Yes. You're not in college anymore. Take the posters down.
I do have posters.
Sir, I mean, I have a Rage Against the Machine poster on my wall and stuff, but like movie posters are like a different thing.
Especially if it's something like that.
They have like artsy ones. Sure. Like, you know, you can make it work, but I have a feeling this didn't work.
This is literally like a cut and paste of like every fucking guy's dorm room.
Yes. Oh, you have the Scarface poster? Shocking.
Oh, wow.
Shocking.
Wow.
Although it was 2004 and the housing market was booming, his real estate success turned out to be just as fleeting as his promising football career. By late 2007, the housing market had crashed and he was in over his head. He started taking cocaine in addition to the painkillers so he could stay up late. Yeah.
Girl.
Don't mix those. That's
escalating so much.
It's escalating quickly.
His poor heart.
Oh my God, yeah. So he starts taking the cocaine so he can stay up late renovating properties. but he couldn't work fast enough to avoid foreclosure and was spending nearly $15,000 a month on his increasing drug habit. Which, like, just stop doing the drugs at that point. Like, I know the withdrawals are serious. I get why people keep taking them. But, like, if I was dropping that kind of cash, I'd have to look at my life and look at my choices here.
At least, like, drop it 30%, 50%.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Wean yourself off.
Be like, okay, I'm just going to spend $10,000 this month instead of $15,000. Something.
He tried getting a loan from the bank, but was denied. And too stubborn to go to his parents for handouts, he started selling his tools just to make ends meet. Both his and Emily's cars were repossessed, and they were on the verge of losing their house. Then one morning, in 2008, he was sitting at the local Bank of America parking lot in a borrowed car after making a deposit, eating lunch, and trying to figure out how he was going to support his family when he saw an armored car pull up. As he watched the guards unloading the bags of cash, he suddenly got an idea. That night, Anthony Googled armored truck robbery and began researching online to see if this heist was possible. He knew the idea of robbing an armored car was absurd and honestly wasn't even sure if he'd have the nerve to go through with it. But the more research he did, the more he thought he might actually be able to pull it off. People were doing it all the time, all over the country. A robber in Florida had stolen $1.8 million from an armored car, then vanished completely. One in D.C. had succeeded by simply dressing up as a Brinks employee, grabbing the cash, and walking away. And suddenly, he was convinced he could pull it off. All he needed to do was disable the guards. But he didn't want to use a gun. He knew if he did, they would just pull theirs, and they'd be stuck in a standoff.
Is he just not understanding what the legalities of this are? Because the second a gun is brought into the chat, like, your prison time goes up exponentially.
Yes.
Like, the second one's there. Or the second you're like, no one leaves this room, guess what? That's kidnapping. Which OJ found out the hard way.
That's why he's against the gun.
Well, yes. Yes. At least yes. There's that.
He's being
At
smart least about there's it. That. He's being smart about it, to be fair.
Okay.
Plus, he didn't want to seriously injure the guard or get shot himself. Most of these guys were usually ex-military. So he knew he needed something that would incapacitate them, make them immediately drop the bags, and ideally make it so they couldn't even see him. Pepper spray. He knew, no matter what, no matter how hard people try or how much training a person has, as soon as you hit them with pepper spray, they will immediately touch their eyes. He even tested it on himself first. Yes.
Can you imagine that? Just swinging in your backyard and being like, ah, to yourself?
Okay. I read about how he did it. He like sprayed it like perfume and walked into it. And he already had a bowl of milk prepared, which is supposed to help to like douse his eyes and face.
Yeah.
But yeah, he like looked up a million videos of people getting pepper sprayed, and he went hard on the research here. It was like his football research.
I mean, great. That also means there's a digital paper trail, but okay.
That's very true. That's very true. Yes. I thought about that, but they never brought it up.
Okay. All right. What state are we in again in this? Idaho?
Washington State. He went to University of Idaho.
That's what correct, it was.
But yes, Monroe, Washington.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Planning the robbery became a full-time job and a new addiction for Anthony. He read everything he could find about Brinks, how it operates, its delivery systems, its tracking devices, and the firearms used by its crews. At night, while his pregnant wife and daughter slept, Anthony stayed up late, chewing tobacco and mapping out the theft detail by detail. He knew that most people did this kind of heist at night under the cover of darkness. So to add to the element of surprise, he planned to do the opposite. He was going to do it in the middle of the day, in plain sight, and make himself so visible that he was invisible. He disguised himself as a landscaper while he cased the bank and made sure the Brinks security guards saw him, quote unquote, working nearby many times prior to the robbery, so they would get used to seeing him there, making him invisible later on. He decided his target would be the Bank of America in town because it was next to the woods and a creek less than 2 feet deep that led to the river, an escape route no one would expect. He figured he could use a jet ski and have a buddy pick him up downriver, but the creek wasn't deep enough.
So he's using a jet ski? Is this Miami Vice?
Can you imagine robbing
a
bank and then, wait, girl, you're not even prepared.
Clearly the fuck not.
He spent weeks digging out a channel and planting rebar stakes to mark his path. But on a test run, he hit a boulder and cracked the jet ski's fiberglass shell. So, realizing the jet ski wouldn't work as a means of escape.
Bye-bye, jet ski.
Which, like, damn, now you fucked up a jet ski.
Which are not cheap.
No, I was going to say, which you just dropped a bunch of money on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, realizing the jet ski wouldn't work as a means of escape, he decided to use an inner tube instead and constructed a pulley system to travel upstream.
I can't.
Girl.
He's going to lazy river this robbery?
Yes.
I can't, girl. This is I'm sorry. The drugs have really fucked up your brain that you think any of this is like a good idea. This is insane.
So wait, it kind of ends up being brilliant.
Oh my God.
Spoiler. All right, we're getting into it.
Okay.
This is why I couldn't handle the story for 1 second.
Okay.
One night, Anthony heard on the news about the impending $700 billion bank bailout, which only made him more determined to go through with his plan.
Sure.
The banks were the ones at fault. They had doled out loans, hooking suckers like him, and never saying no until it was too late. The banks were going to get all this money, but in his own words, who the fuck is going to bail us out?
Mm-hmm.
Anthony decided it was time to finally put his plan into motion. And a few days before he made his move, he put an ad on Craigslist looking for 15 to 20 workers for a city cleanup project called the Clean Monroe Beautification Project that paid $28.50 an hour. The laborers were told to wear jeans, a blue shirt, work shoes, and a yellow safety vest, and to bring safety goggles and a painter's mask with them. They were instructed to meet in the Bank of America parking lot at the exact time Anthony planned to rob the armored car. On September 30th, he had a friend pick him up and drop him off by the bank. He put his landscaping outfit on over his clothes, as well as a wig, a painter's mask, and a fake mustache, and started pulling weeds outside as the other job applicants stood by. When the armored car pulled up at 11:05 a.m., Anthony squeezed his eyes shut and prayed. Knowing God wouldn't approve of what he was going to do, he didn't ask for help, but just to keep his family safe.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I respect that. Yeah.
Then he opened his eyes, threw his pesticide sprayer to the ground, and, gripping a can of bear mace under his arm like a football, sprinted at the guards. It went just as he planned. The pepper-sprayed guard immediately let go of the dolly with the bags of cash and reached for his eyes. And before anyone realized what was happening, Anthony grabbed two bags and ran into the woods to the creek. He threw the money in the inner tube and pulled both the tube and himself up the creek with the cables he had set up. After traveling about 200 yards upstream and exiting the creek on the opposite side of the highway from the bank, he removed his wig and worker's clothing, which had been attached with Velcro, and made his way through an apartment complex.
I'm sorry, was this Tearaway?
Yes. Stripper style.
That's incredible. Okay. That's the best.
He put in work. The best thing. Like, he put in work. I got to respect the hustle here. I'm not saying go rob a bank, but like credit where credit's due.
Do your due diligence in everything in your life.
He tossed his wet clothes and stole a new outfit from the building's laundry room. Then he walked to the nearby Windermere real estate office where he called a friend for a ride. He had chosen that spot specifically because it was so conspicuous, literally right next to the police station. So it would be the perfect alibi if he needed one. As he waited for his friend, he chatted with a real estate agent who luckily didn't notice that Anthony's shoes were still wet.
Mm.
After his friend picked him up, they drove to a motel where another friend was waiting. They threw the wet money on the bed and began counting. They gave up around $320,000, and Anthony estimated that he'd gotten around $400,000 total. He couldn't believe it and had thought maybe he'd get half that at best. After hiding the money, he drove home just in time to help his daughter get ready for bed. That night, he and Emily heard about the daring robbery on the news. The police, who had arrived on the scene, had been met by around 15 people matching the description of the perp and realized they were dealing with a real-life Thomas Crown affair.
I fucking love that movie.
Oh my God.
I've not seen the original. I've only seen the Pierce Brosnan, Rene Russo.
Yes.
Fuckfest on a fucking, on the stairs of this mansion.
I was
going to
say, it's very sexy. Very sexy.
Oh my God. Oh!
I watched it like as a teenager, preteen, and I was very
like a horny preteen. Yeah. I mean, I saw it
as I was. Yes.
I saw it as an older, mature woman, and I was like, oh, what's this? Fucking on the stairs is not comfortable, though.
No,
we'll just say
no.
It looks great.
I was like, clearly that is something done for movies, because anyone in that position in real life would be like, no, can we move to a bed or like a rug even?
You're like, that rung is right on just that one spot in the back. That is just the worst.
Yes.
Love that movie, though. Ah,
yes. And honestly, it's a baller move. Like, get a bunch of people who look like you if you're going to rob something. Like,
whenever I see a bowler hat, I think of the Thomas Crown Affair.
Yes, same.
Thank you for bringing that little moment into my life.
God, you're welcome. Amazing. You're welcome.
I love you.
I love you. I always enjoy reminiscing about the movies from our childhood.
Yes. The various traumatic and not of our childhood.
Yes. Traumatic and titillating. Take your pick.
Hey-o. Yeah. You're the best. I love you. You're amazing.
Same.
You just go right to the, you know that I love an alliteration, girl.
Yes.
And I'm a perv.
And same. So I always try. I know, because I know you appreciate it. So you're my prime audience for that. Like, you're the person who's going to catch the alliteration and be like,
yes,
that was a good alliteration. Thank you.
I think I may have told you this. I was in a very successful off-Broadway show for quite a bit of time. And it was like a Shakespeare, but it was also like a comedy, and there was a lot of improv and blah, blah, blah. And so we'd like add in bits and jokes and whatever. And one of the actors would do an alliteration joke every single night. And the only laugh would be from me. I would like guffaw, and like no one would understand the joke in the audience. And I was like, I fucking hate all of you because this joke is fucking brilliant.
I love that.
It was something like, there's three things that I love, like drinking, doing the deed, and alliteration. And I was like, that's incredible. And like, no one would understand the joke. And I'm like, I hate all of you.
You're like, you uncultured fools. How dare you?
Yeah, I'm like, an alliteration joke is magical. Where the fuck are you? I mean, everyone was drinking. That was kind of the conceit of the show. But yeah, it was devastating to me that joke got cut after trying it on multiple audiences. And they just like didn't get it.
I'm like, God damn it.
You know,
this is why we can't have nice things.
10,000%.
So back to the story. Canine units led the police to the thief's trail by the woods, where they found a number of discarded items: a blue cap, a long brown wig, a white particle mask, and sunglasses. But the path stopped at the edge of the creek. Helicopters circled overhead, but after an hour of searching, had turned up nothing else. Then a patrol officer noticed something floating in the water about 200 yards downstream. A black and yellow inner tube with the word Hornet and a picture of a yellow jacket on it. When they also found a blue shirt and a two-way radio on the creek's bank a few feet away, they realized they'd found the thief's unusual means of getaway. The local public was fascinated by the thief's ingenuity and unique getaway method, with one radio listener calling into a talk show, dubbing him D.B. Tuber, a reference to the mysterious 1970s airplane hijacker D.B. Cooper, which is hysterical.
That's pretty great. That's like slow clap moment. I'll be like, yes, that's respect. Yes. Big ups.
If I had been the person to think of that, I'd be like, a little pat on the back for myself.
Absolutely. That's incredible.
As you can imagine, the name stuck, and the thief had gained a somewhat sympathetic following, especially since it was the height of the financial crisis and banks were highly unpopular at the time. Not to mention the fact that the thief hadn't used a gun or caused serious harm to anyone. Detectives pursued the case late into the night of the robbery. Though they were able to swipe a bit of DNA from the particle mask, it didn't match anything in the criminal database. So, without a suspect, the DNA was worthless. They examined the few seconds of grainy surveillance tape from the Bank of America's security cameras, but with the mask hiding his face, all they could tell was that the culprit seemed to be a young white man around 6 feet tall. The robber had been smart, and authorities were stumped. The next day, however, one of the patrol sergeants mentioned an odd visit he had received a few weeks before. A city worker had stopped by the station to tell him about a homeless man who had found a disguise and a radio near the bank. It wasn't much of a lead, and no one from the force had followed up on it initially. But with nothing else to go on, they decided to investigate. They discovered that the report had come in on September 9th, 3 weeks before the robbery, and a public works employee who had been fixing a sewer near the bank had reported it. But when they reached out to him, he didn't have much to go on and just said that the man who'd found the disguise had had a beard and a dog with him. So police decided to head east to Sultan, a small town nearby where the local unhoused were known to camp, and brought a bag of burgers with them to encourage people to talk. Five burgers and five people later, they had found their man. When the police approached him, he looked up from his crossword puzzle, gave them a big smile, and said, "It's about time you got here." The man was 53-year-old Alan Dean. He'd read about the robbery and subsequent manhunt in the papers and was waiting for the cops to track him down. He'd been living on the streets since losing his job as a framer due to a heart condition in the mid-90s. Before the recession hit, he'd been making as much as $200 a day panhandling around Monroe, but times have gotten tough, and recently he'd been lucky to make $50. To keep his mind alert, he would buy and read two newspapers a day, completing the crosswords on his own. Alan told the cops about finding the radio, particle mask, dark wig, sunglasses, and a can of mace behind the dumpster, and that he had quickly realized it was a disguise meant for no good. Alan, who had been convicted of a felony for chopping down trees illegally and didn't want to wind up behind bars because his fingerprints were now on the radio, had run up to the public works employee working nearby and told him what he'd found. While the man called the cops to report the items, Alan saw a silver SUV pull up behind the dumpster and a young man jump out to retrieve the pile of goods. Alan told him not to mess with it and that they'd called the cops about it, but the man picked it up anyway and drove away. As he sped off, Alan scribbled down the license plate number on his crossword puzzle, and the police suspected that he'd seen one of the thieves' practice runs. Alan gave the number to the detectives, who immediately ran it through the database. The car was registered to a pretty blue-eyed brunette named Emily Curcio, and turns out one of the cops at the precinct had gone to school with her husband, Anthony. When they showed him the picture of the robber from the surveillance photo, and he looked at the way the thief was crouched with the mace in a runner stance, he told them that Anthony had been an athlete, and there was a strong possibility that it was him. But despite having the DNA and the license plate, it wasn't enough for the authorities to move in on Curcio. They needed more evidence. They either needed to bust him with the money or get a DNA sample from him that matched the DNA found on the particle mask. With the FBI now involved in the investigation, they began surveilling Anthony, waiting for him to slip up. After the heist, Anthony had moved the money to a friend's warehouse, where he had set up a makeshift office that he decorated with, can you guess? His favorite crime movie posters.
Of course.
Of course. One day, while his family was out of the house, he brought the money, still moldy and wet, to the house and dried it with fabric softener in the dryer. He eventually funneled the money through two small businesses in the area. Although it never occurred to Emily that her husband might have committed the robbery they'd heard about on the news, she began to suspect there was something going on with him. He was acting distant again, like he'd done in college, so she confronted him and asked where he was spending all his time and if he was back on drugs. When he blew up at her and got defensive, she screamed at him and kicked him out of the house. So Anthony grabbed a stack of cash, about $30,000 worth, and headed for Las Vegas with some friends. But it wasn't all fun and games. While partying, he drunkenly attempted to jump over a coffee table and broke his wrist and elbow. He became suicidal and woke up the next day on the bathroom floor with a tub filled with water and a hairdryer plugged into the outlet next to him. It was the wake-up call he needed, and missing his family, he returned to Monroe. Emily took him back, too tired and confused to know what else to do. When she asked why his arm was in a sling, he said he'd hurt himself playing basketball, but assured her everything was going to be all right now and told her he'd made some money from a real estate deal. On November 3rd, 2008, Anthony drove his new Range Rover, purchased under a friend's name, to the parking lot of a Target in Monroe, where he'd arranged a money drop with a buddy of $17,000 in cash in a safe. But as he got out of his car, he saw the cops close in. Not long before, the FBI, who had been trailing him since he'd returned from Vegas, saw him toss a Gatorade bottle with his chewing tobacco spittle into the trash can at a gas station. They picked it up after he left and ran it for DNA. When they compared it to the DNA found on the particle mask, they got a match and finally had enough evidence to arrest him for the robbery. The final nail in the coffin was when the person who laundered the money turned informant. Anthony was shocked his friend had turned him in, but said he was even more surprised that Emily never turned on him. When the police questioned her about her husband's involvement and whereabouts on the day of the theft, she told them, "Do you think I'm going to assist you put the father of my kids away? He needs help, not jail."
I mean, that's like ride or die shit.
I know. He got a good one here. He lucked out.
I mean, yeah, but I'm also like, I mean, I guess it wasn't a violent crime. So
was it a violent crime? They were broke. He was trying to help the family. Like, granted, I feel like part of the reason they were having money troubles was because he was spending 15 grand a month on drugs.
I think that's a very big reason why they were having money problems. Yes. Very likely.
That adds up quick.
Oh, yes. Sure does.
Yeah. Anthony refused to cooperate with the authorities, and no other charges were filed against any of his co-conspirators. All of the money, except for what he paid the getaway driver and his other accomplices, was eventually recovered. During his trial in July of the following year, the judge described Anthony's armored car heist as the stuff of movie thrillers, and the prosecutor said the robbery stood out for its boldness, level of planning, and ingenuity. Anthony's family and friends sent the judge more than 100 pages of letters attesting to his fundamentally good character and highlighting his struggles with his addiction to painkillers. The prosecutor agreed Anthony was a troubled soul, but didn't discount the seriousness of the robbery. In the end, 28-year-old Anthony Curcio was sentenced to 6 years in federal prison for his $400,000 heist. While in prison, he became friends with George Young, who was famously portrayed by Johnny Depp in one of Anthony's favorite movies, Blow.
Mm.
Despite this bright spot, however, prison was tough on Anthony. He was sent to solitary confinement for being with two inmates who had assaulted another. While the prison authorities knew he was not involved in the attack, he spent 7 months there while he was, quote unquote, under investigation. During that time, he received beatings, witnessed suicides, and had cockroaches crawl all over his body at night.
Jesus.
Which, if anything was going to make me not want to go to prison, just tell me that. It's and that. I'd be like, no. Yeah.
Yep.
I'd be like,
yep.
No, thank you. I will be on the straight and narrow forever. Thank you. But his prison sentence actually ended up being a blessing in disguise. And Anthony vowed to turn his life around when he eventually got out. He was finally able to get clean and started drawing pictures, which he began turning into children's books for his daughters. He said he wanted them to have something they could look at later on in life to know that their dad loved them. He eventually wrote and illustrated over 20 kids' books, including one aimed at the children of incarcerated parents titled My Daddy's in Jail. After serving 5 years of his 6-year sentence in medium to low security prisons in Texas and Florida, Anthony was finally released on April 4th, 2013. Afterwards, he returned to the Seattle area, reunited with his wife and two daughters, and immediately went to work repairing his relationships with his family and friends. He left his addiction and rage in prison and emerged calm, clean, and determined never to return to his former life. He self-published the children's books he'd written and illustrated in prison, and eventually his book, The Boy Who Never Gave Up, was picked for a school reading program. It led to him having two bestsellers, and after several years of being severely broke, Anthony was finally able to buy a home again. He also started putting his story to good use, and now spends his time giving speeches to middle schools, high schools, and universities all over the U.S. about drug abuse prevention and the importance of making positive choices. While he tries to avoid glamorizing his criminal past, he admits that the words prison and bank robbery are a good way to get teenagers to pay attention.
Yes.
Yes. Especially if you were like, I got away in an inner tube, I would be like, go on. Continue. I'm all ears.
Tell me more. Yes.
Tell me more. I was like, and you had a cast of extras dressed exactly like you? Like, I can't.
Yes.
Now described as the world's nicest bank robber, Anthony has also been featured on several media platforms. And in June 2013, he released a book about the caper and his life called Heist and High, which went on to win several awards. Of the book, Anthony said, quote, I wrote the book for one reason, to open people's eyes to the truth about prescription medication. Addiction is something that leads only a few places, treatment, jail, or death. I'm very fortunate to have a second chance at life. What type of person would I be if I didn't try to help others avoid the hell that my family and I went through? End quote. In the wake of his success, he reached out and tried to make amends with everyone he wronged, including the armored car driver. Although he admitted the workers he hired on Craigslist were never paid, In a Reddit AMA, he acknowledged that he still owed them the money and said if any of them saw this post, to reach out to him and he'd happily pay what he owed them. In the end, Anthony said he was glad he was caught and actually credits Alan Dean, the man who wrote down his license plate, for ultimately saving his life, knowing that if he'd gotten away with it, the robbery would have likely just been the first in a series of increasingly serious crimes he would have committed to support his drug addiction. Prison forced him to get clean. Now he wants to make sure he stays that way and helps others do that as well. He says he now finds happiness focusing on other people rather than himself, especially his family, and that there is no better way to live than when you get a second chance to appreciate everything. And that is the story of Anthony Curcio, the football player turned bank robber, also known as DBTuber.
I love that so much.
I did too.
I love a good redemption story, girl.
It was really good. It was really sweet. Honestly, like, props to him. Even the police said, like, if Alan Dean hadn't written down his license number, they don't know that he ever would have been caught.
Yeah.
That's how well thought out and brilliant this whole scheme was. I was so impressed. I'm not going to lie. There was a point in the story where I was like, damn, could I rob an armored car? Like, fuck. And then I was like, no. Oh, man. I read about the cockroaches and I was like, I'm out. No.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
I love that. I'm so shocked. I don't know of it because that time, not just that, but that I guess allegedly there was all these bank robberies and happening.
Yeah.
In that time. I had no clue.
I'd never heard this either. I can't honestly even remember how I stumbled across it. But I read the DBTuber and the InnerTube thing and like all of the forethought he put into it. And I was immediately sold. Also, I don't give a shit about the Super Bowl, but since the Super Bowl was last weekend, I was like, ah, football, that seems appropriate.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm just so shocked I don't know about this.
This is why you have me in your life.
One of 1,000 fucking reasons. Absolutely. Yes. I love that story. And I love how it ended. I love that.
I do too. I felt like it was like very heartwarming, but entertaining and not too traumatizing.
Not traumatizing at all. It's great.
No.
I loved it. That was amazing.
I'm so glad. I loved your story. Cursed rocks. Who knew?
You know, don't fuck with Pele. Don't fuck with any gods.
Correct. Says the atheist. Don't take things that aren't yours. Exactly. Let's go with that.
Also that. Don't. Yeah. Literally, like what that woman said is like, you want to go into someone's house and like take some shit that doesn't belong to you. Don't fucking do that.
It's not yours. Put it down.
Not yours.
Thank you.
At least ask. I love that.
I'm so glad. I loved yours. I love you.
I love you. And we love you. This is another fucking horror podcast. I'm Monique Sanchez.
And I'm Amy Traden.
You can find me on the gram at pinupgirlmo.
You can find me at Lobotomy, and that's Lobot period Amy.
You should also follow the show on the gram. We put some fun shit on there. We are at another fucking horror podcast. Every 6th episode, we do a true listener tales episode where we read you your true crazy stories. So if you have one or you just want to say hi, email us at anotherfuckinghorrorpodcast@gmail.com with a period instead of the U in fucking. And if you like the show, tell a friend, tell 2 friends. Tell 3 friends, but definitely rate, review, and subscribe because that really helps our numbers and it gives us more visibility so that hopefully we can do this full time sooner rather than later. Guys, we're so obsessed with you. Stay warm. Keep it cute.
Keep it creepy.
Bye.